Hi, welcome to Bring Back the Bustle, a podcast about revitalizing rural America. I'm Siobhan Jones, your host. Today's topic is about right-sizing your rural business to achieve profitability in rural markets. We've entitled the episode, Don't Supersize It. So maybe some of you listeners are looking for a Big Mac. I don't have any Big Macs, but I invite you to stick around. You may discover something about investing in rural America that appeals to you. Rural America can support more businesses than Dollar General and Waffle House. This episode, at its core, is about how higher-end offerings can succeed in rural America, and it sheds light on why an investment in our Rural Opportunity Zone Fund makes sense. Last week, we discovered that there's enough money in rural communities to justify more businesses, more services and products being available on the ground in these communities. So we're looking at bricks and mortar here. During that episode last week, I said that right-sizing a rural business was so important that it deserves its own episode. And so here we are. We then discussed staffing problems in rural America and found solutions to those problems, paving the way for our businesses to open up shop in rural America, because you have to have local staff. This isn't something that AI can do. But just plopping in a rural community the exact footprint that you have in major cities may work and it may not. For example, fast food is the same from community to community, so it works the same. But, they may do something different. They may vary their hours to meet demand. But the menu and the footprint, the size of the building is the same. Walmart, by comparison, has different size footprints for different markets. So clearly, I'm using the term right-sizing more broadly than the size of your workforce, which is how that term normally is used. I'm looking at your entire business model as something that needs to be right-sized, particularly from a location standpoint. Are you going to, or should you, locate in rural America? Or better yet, should you invest in a fund or a company that has a rural strategy? I'll leave that for you to determine, hopefully after you've listened more. For our example, let's continue thinking of company stores or franchise business models. So a company store is Walmart, a franchise is McDonald's. But those particular company stores and franchises aren't what we're going to focus on because they already play in rural America and they're on the low end. And today's episode is about how higher end businesses can play in rural America. So let me choose a company store or a franchise business model that doesn't currently locate in rural communities. I'm going to think of a major hotel chain because, and you could pick either one of them, Marriott, Hilton, because they have company stores and they have franchisees. So they own some of their stores and they put their flag on other locations that are owned by private investors. The example will hold true under either business model, whether it's a company store or a franchise. Currently, the only product that the major hotel companies place in rural communities is something like a Super 8 located near the interstate for truckers, right? Let's take a moment and understand how they made that decision so that we can decide whether to follow their model or do something different. Those businesses have a profile for the ideal city or location where they want to establish a branch or a franchise. They already know what they're selling, hotel rooms, and they know how much revenue they expect to earn per location. So the next thing they do is look for areas that fit their location profile. Once they decide on their ideal location, they pretty much eliminate others, right? The ideal location often is based on where they think they're likely to find enough people to meet certain revenue metrics. They speculate that a town with X number of people will produce X number of customers without much work. See, there's this location, location, location mantra in real estate. And sometimes real estate owners expect to rely primarily on foot or car traffic and not have to have a customer acquisition strategy. That way of doing business clearly works, or they wouldn't continue doing it. If you want to play in rural America on the higher end, your analysis should be a lot more layered than theirs. To right-size a rural business, you need to either convert a larger percentage of the local customer base, adjust your offering, and or use a smaller footprint. We get that here at the fund, at the Rural Fund. And because this space has been left open for us, we are willing to spend the time right-sizing different offerings, offerings that solve pain points for rural America. The convert more strategy is, in my opinion, especially in rural areas, it's based on getting to market first and working hard to make your customers into loyal, not easily poached customers. In fact, you want your relationship with your customers in and of itself to be so strong that it discourages new entrants into these small markets. See, there are common barriers to entry that you know of. You know, high cost of getting into a business can prevent someone from opening one. High regulation is another barrier to entry. And you want your relationship with your customer to be on the list of barriers to entry. And that's possible because it is the opposite of what larger businesses have decided to do. To scale, their business model is to remove as much service as possible, to do as little as possible. So what's left for us is high-end service at moderate prices, which is possible in rural areas because you can pay, you can be a leader in compensation and still not spend anywhere near what would be necessary in a larger city with a higher cost of living. So to quickly summarize the convert more strategy, it means you want to plant your flag and then sew up the space. So let's go back to franchise fast food. Say you're Dairy Queen. You want someone who was thinking about opening a Baskin Robbins to conclude that there's nothing that they could do better in your market and then just move away from that idea. They need to go think about something else to bring to the market because you've got this particular space sewn up. Instead of going with an established franchise, you also have the option of establishing a rural brand that fits rural markets. So with our ice cream store, let's call it the Old Dutch Ice Cream Shop and make only homemade flavors, you know, fresh peach ice cream in summer. There's probably a Mickey D's in town that won't be able to sell a single yogurt cone if Old Dutch opens up with that kind of menu. Because again, you have to compare yourself to what is most prevalent in the market, how most businesses operate when they are first to market or when they otherwise have a monopoly. They don't care about customer service because they know their customers have no place else to go. They raise prices without thinking about delivering more value for the extra money. You know, they call it pricing power. I think we have a little pricing power here. And the quality of the offering can also sometimes fall off. So you're being asked to pay more money for less service and a lesser quality product. You start selling cones that are stale, or you start running out of chocolate sauce. If you want to keep the market to yourself, you have to resist those urges that the larger players do in these spaces. Even though you're the only option, don't assume that it will always be the case. Make it the case by maintaining standards and delivering value and a positive customer experience day in and day out. Now, no one's perfect. So when you fail to meet your standards, make it right with the customer. For example, say, "I'm sorry we're out of chocolate sauce today. We have a shipment coming in on Friday. Here's a dollar off coupon. Come back then to get your chocolate. But today we made a homemade caramel sauce. You want to try that?" That way, your customer will be happy with the caramel sauce today and will come back on Friday for her chocolate fix. More important, she isn't going to say, I went to Old Dutch and they were out of ingredients. Because word of mouth in a small town is like a wildfire. It spreads quickly. And whatever impression you make, good or bad, will be seared into the minds of the people who hear it. And it'll stay there for a while. We get that at the Rural Fund. Even though we've made the conscious decision to locate near big businesses, AI data centers, we understand that our business model is to own and operate a large number of small, successful businesses. Another way for a small business or a franchise location to convert more prospects into customers is to broaden your offerings. If you're going to play in rural America, think about whether you can profitably deviate from the offerings you make available in larger markets. I understand that that's a sourcing issue and that buying less of an item means paying higher prices, you know, losing economies of scale. But in our last episode, we took note of how Walmart operates in both large and rural markets. Most of its products are the same from store to store, but you'll also find Latin foods in Miami stores and Cajun foods in Louisiana stores. And I'm sure there are variations all across the country, all across markets. In fact, I think Walmart may be overdoing the catering aspect, which small businesses have to be careful about because it can open space for competitors. For example, don't stock Cajun foods to the exclusion of lower salt foods you might sell in other markets. Add SKUs. Don't take them away unless you've determined that they won't sell. And meaning to determine that they won't sell, you have to stock them and see that they don't sell. You can't just assume that something won't sell because these people are rural. Because in reality, just because someone buys Zatarain's, which is a rice dish that's pretty salty, doesn't mean they don't also want skim milk and reduced salt potato chips. Walmart seems to remove healthy SKUs in favor of unhealthy products that have regional appeal, which is why I believe there's space in rural America for an Epicurean grocer. I'm going to come back to that Epicurean grocer example because it is a case in point for the smaller footprint option, which is the third way that I said you can compete in rural America. Before that, though, let me summarize the broaden your options play. In our example of the Dairy Queen, think frozen yogurt for those on a diet. They shouldn't have to go to Walmart. I mean, what's the name of it? They shouldn't have to go to McDonald's to get their yogurt. They can get it from you. And then also think diabetic ice cream, assuming there is such a thing. I don't know. But that would be for those who have that particular medical condition. And if there isn't any diabetic ice cream that you can easily source, then there may be someone in this rural community who can make it for you. Remember, rural people like to do business with each other. They are accustomed to employing each other and to doing business with each other. And if you expand along those lines, using the rural providers in the area, soon everybody in town will be able to safely and happily enjoy your ice cream shop. Now, returning to the smaller footprint means of thriving in rural markets. One type of vendor sorely missing from rural markets is the Epicurean grocer. I know this from firsthand experience. There are no Whole Foods, no fresh markets, no Trader Joe's outside of major markets. But there are many smaller such stores cramming into those major markets that are adequately served by the top Epicurean chains. These smaller players can't compete on price or selection. So they tend to get pushed out of the major markets over time, unless they have some special appeal like a Zabar's, for example, that can survive in New York, or DeBruno Brothers. I remember that from when I lived in Philadelphia. Rather than shuttering their businesses altogether or retreating to an internet-only strategy, they should think about taking their brands to smaller markets where they won't have to compete with better funded, more recognizable Epicurean stores. You can have fewer SKUs, much less square footage, fancier products at higher prices, and that store can absolutely thrive, even right next door to a Walmart, Winn-Dixie, or Piggly Wiggly. The customer can buy the staples at the large supermarket and then buy the foods they actually love at the local epicure, the Bruno Brothers, Zabar's type epicurean grocer. The fact is, rural markets may be better for private companies like ours that don't have market analysts to answer to. Let's take a huge retailer, one of the biggest of all, Costco. The Costco nearest me in Miami, my apartment, does $1 million per day in revenue. They're $1 million every single day. There are four Costco locations in Miami-Dade County, Florida. I don't know if they all do that well or if mine is special, but if their ambition is for stores that do that much revenue, I concede rural is not the right play for them. But if our little epicurean grocery market can do 1/20th of that, or just $50,000 in revenue per day, that's more than $18 million in annual revenue. Assuming a 30% profit margin, and I don't do any kinds of projects that don't yield at least that amount, that's $5 million per year, per store. And that's the kind of volume investing strategy that we're deploying at the Rural Fund. A few million of profits here, a few million there, and over time, we end up with $40 or $50 million in profits per year to share among our little investment group. We're not trying to be anything bigger than that. At the Rural Fund, we are absolutely committed to investing in rural America. It is a rural opportunity zone fund, after all. We have designed our business model to generate revenues from this market segment for investors all across America. As I've explained in previous podcast episodes, the way to make money in rural America is to own both the real estate and the businesses operating in that real estate. Go to our website and download the rest of those episodes, or download them wherever you get your podcast. But our website is ruralqrof.com, ruralqrof.com. And these operating businesses must be right-sized for rural markets. That's what we do best at the Rural Fund: identify businesses that solve a pain point for rural customers, right-size the businesses, and deliver a customer experience that quietly implies that this town ain't big enough for both of us to anyone else thinking of competing in the same space as us. Maybe that's what I should have named this episode: This Town Ain't Big Enough for Both of Us. We intend to own the little markets that we play in, and we'll talk more about our unique ability to do so next week. This is Siobhan. I'm looking forward to next week, and I hope you are too.